It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The latest word that we get is no word. That is no change in the condition of UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson. But yes, he is fighting the COVID-19 and, according to at least one newspaper, fighting for his life. The Prime Minister was diagnosed with COVID 10 days ago. He left self-quarantine Sunday night to be tested in a nearby hospital. But then, last night, a rapid deterioration in his condition, high fever, persistent coughing, apparently prompted the move to the intensive care unit. Yes, reportedly he's not on a ventilator, not even prepared for one, but he has gotten oxygen treatment to help his breathing. World leaders have been responding, a number of get well messages, including President Trump. Take a listen.
Americans are all praying for his recovery. He's been a really good friend. He's been really something very special, strong, resolute, doesn't quit, doesn't give up.
Doesn't give up. Yeah, he's got that Winston Churchill spirit, which is a good thing. Filling in for him is the Secretary of State equivalent here, the Foreign Secretary. And yes, they still have a big problem here. Over 5,000 deaths from COVID, over 50,000 cases. So a challenge on a couple of fronts right now.
All right, Greg Palcott from Fox this morning giving that report about Boris Johnson. Remember that Boris Johnson is the recently, by the skin of his teeth, elected Prime Minister of Great Britain, and he's the one who pushed Brexit through by sheer force of will. It would be a great thing for the European unionists and the elites of Europe if Boris Johnson should succumb, I'm just saying, to COVID-19, but we just hope and pray that he won't. I'm also hearing that his, you know, he lives with his girlfriend. This is the way of things, you see. He lives with his girlfriend, who has also now been tested positive, and she is pregnant with their baby. So that's a complication. Tomorrow, Katie Hopkins, who is my favorite go-to British commentator, will be joining us. And we'll talk to Katie about what's happening in the UK. And I think you'll find that fascinating. I hope so. I certainly, of course, I have a personal interest. My son is in Scotland. But I've always cared about, you know, I watch British TV. So I love, no, I'm just kidding. I'm making a facetious comment, but actually I'm very British and Irish. And, you know, my roots are there and many of your roots are there. And we are certainly connected to them, all of us as Americans. But anyway, we need to join the president in praying for Boris Johnson that he would recover from this for many, many reasons. Let me just say that the cases in New York are going down. They just are. This is the week that the experts and the models, you know, came out guns blazing, telling us this would be the worst week ever. So many people are going to die. It's just going to be horrid. And yet, it's coming down in New York, the epicenter. So that's good news, but I guess bad news too, because again, the so-called models and the Anthony Fauci's of this world are not to be trusted. Now, they may be as nice as they can be. I've seen, in my lifetime, I've seen a lot of really nice people that had great personalities, were kind, do some horrible things. Oh, think of, let's talk about Neville Chamberlain, speaking of Britain, who was just too nice to go against the Nazis. And he almost was the undoing of the British people. So we need people that are smart, and I don't care how gruff they are. We need people that have wisdom and the courage to do what's right. And right now I'm on the side of not trusting Anthony Fauci. Remember there was a knockdown, drag-out, well, argument, we'll say, in the Situation Room in the White House yesterday, Saturday afternoon, between Anthony Fauci and Peter Navarro, who has been trying to get this hydroxychloroquine, you know, all these supplies and get it manufactured here. And so we have stockpiles of it. I guess I should go to that next since I transitioned to that. Let's go to that, because you would think that with the advent of something that is actually saving people's lives, and we've heard enough stories now, I don't care if they're not finished with their clinical tests. We have enough stories with a drug that's been out for decades treating malaria. We know about this drug. It's not unknown. It's like somebody discovered a leaf and no one's ever tried it before. It's not that way. It has been tried and on malaria patients. It's now been tried on COVID-19 diagnosed people, and it's having amazing results, and that's what the president has been saying. And I'm going to give you just an example, a positive example, before I jump into the negative things that are going on around us. This is a story from Jackie Ibanez this morning early on Fox. Let's listen. Clip two.
Karen Whitsitt is giving many Americans hope that certain drugs can help patients win their battle with coronavirus. Whitsitt crediting hydroxychloroquine for saving her life. Listen to this.
You have to give this an opportunity. And for me, it saved my life. If President Trump had not talked about this, it would not be something that's accessible for anyone to be able to get that right now.
All right, I'm going to interrupt Jackie, and I'll tell you that she Karen Whitsitt is, it turns out, a Democratic state rep in Michigan. And she heard what she just said. If President Trump had been talking about this, I would not have known. And so she was infected. She was having trouble breathing. And so she said within 3 hours, both she and her husband were feeling relieved. She's crediting President Trump with saving her life. So just a story there. Before you hear the rest of this, now, you would think that this was a horrible thing that the president was doing, to sort of say the hydrochloroquine is having some success and he thinks we ought to try it, and for Peter Navarro to try to get it in and stockpile it so people can have it, and that Anthony Fauci could be fighting against it, but he is, because he has superior knowledge, of course, and we haven't had enough tests yet, so just let people die till we've had several months here to check this out. I just reject that. I'm on the president's side unabashedly. Let me just give you an example of the kind of blowback he's getting. This is another kind of partisan operative, another Democrat from the state of New York, and this is what he had to say about President Trump and hydrochloroquine. This is four.
If you had said to me what would ultimately have my mother fall, I never thought it would be some virus, and it is still hard to get around that. But yeah. Look, in New York City, this is playing out in so many families. And I got to tell you, Donald Trump has blood on his hands, and he has my mom's blood on his hands. And he sent us a hospital that's right here in the Manhattan Harbor, and no one can get on that hospital. This is something that is just outrageous. And so it's very tough to mourn under these circumstances. I mean, the government's supposed to protect our people, and we're supposed to be able to protect our parents and grandparents the way they protected us. And we're not able to do that. And perhaps the thing that I struggle with the most is, how do you mourn at a time when you can't connect with people? There can't be a funeral. There can't be a traditional shiva. There's no way to reach out to my stepfather and see him personally because he's quarantined.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt him, because what we didn't hear was that his mother was like, I think she was in her 90s. She was in around 90 years old. And so she died. She was a Democratic operative in the state of New York, and he talks about that. But it's President Trump has blood on his hands for his mother's death. And he also talks about, this wild discussion by the president, supposedly wild, of hydrochloroquine. And, of course, then that's picked up by reporters. Here's the CNN reporter Jeremy Dimon on his very serious report about the president's statements on hydrochloroquine. Let's listen, clip six.
I want to save lives, and I don't want it to be in a lab for the next year and a half as people are dying all over the place.
The president, of course, has been promoting that drug, appearing in the White House briefing room or the Rose Garden day after day to talk about the benefits of this drug, hydroxychloroquine. Again, there are clinical trials underway, and some doctors are able to prescribe it off-label in emergency cases, but there is not yet a body of scientific evidence backing up the use of this drug. And that is why when Dr. Anthony Fauci, the head of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, when he stepped up to the podium, I tried asking him about that. The president, though, would not let him.
And would you also weigh in on this issue of hydroxychloroquine? What do you think about this, and what is the medical evidence?
That question?
Yeah.
Well, maybe 15,
the doctor.
15 times. You don't have to ask.
He's your medical expert, correct?
He's answered that question 15 times.
Now, Fauci, of course, has been on the record talking about this drug and saying that there is not yet conclusive proof that this drug is effective in the treatment of coronavirus. But I think it's especially notable when you see the president there acknowledging earlier in the day that he is not a doctor as he doles out this advice about this hydroxychloroquine drug. And then when you actually see a doctor at the podium, the top government expert on infectious diseases, it's notable that the president won't let him speak. Jeremy Dimon, CNN.
CNN, yeah. So the president now will not let Anthony Fauci speak about hydroxychloroquine. According to Jeremy Dimon, when the president is interrupting and saying, you've asked us that question 15 times and it's been answered, we know that's true, don't we? And of course, the inference from the reporters and the briefings is that President Trump, you are a dummy. You don't know anything about medicine. Just because you can stand up here for hours and talk about all of these things with great knowledge, that doesn't mean you're smart. And so just because you believe in hydroxychloroquine and you're seeing the results and that your Peter Navarro has brought in case studies of this tremendous success with this drug, you don't know what you're talking about. We want to hear from the expert, Anthony Fauci, who would, if he had his way, deny each of us, those of you who have been diagnosed positive on this, any the ability to get hydroxychloroquine. That's what he would do. So the president, I'm encouraged. Because if indeed he did mean to cut Anthony Fauci off, which I'm not convinced he did, I think he was just sick of that question being asked over and over again, that might mean he's beginning to see Anthony Fauci differently. And I'm glad, because I think he is not capable and he doesn't have the wisdom to be in charge of what we should be doing as a nation. There's more to consider than his narrow medical interests. And let me just also say the former New York Times reporter, whose name escapes me, but he's been speaking out a lot lately about this and getting tremendous fire. Talk about putting your reputation on the line. He described Anthony Fauci and his own characterization as someone who had a moderately successful career but has just gotten the allegation is that he is thrilled by the power that he has achieved by making these outrageous claims. I kind of think that's true. And so just saying. Let me go on and say that there's a medical group now. It's called the American Thoracic Society, issuing guidelines Monday suggesting that COVID-19 patients with pneumonia should get doses of this drug, which is an anti-malaria drug, hydroxychloroquine. It's a major medical society specializing in the treatment of respiratory diseases, and it has endorsed the use of hydroxychloroquine. Of course, what do they know? They should talk to Anthony Fauci and get sorted out, I guess. But meanwhile, Whoopi Goldberg, Mika Brzezinski, CNN's Brian Stelter, Oliver Darcy on CNN are all accusing the president of financial motives. He just wants this, drug to be available to you to save your life because he must be making money. That's the allegation. I could play those things for you, but I don't want to take the time in this moment. And on NBC, the analyst Glenn Kirshner suggested that President Trump is guilty of second-degree murder. Let me just read his statements. Trump's conduct easily satisfies all three elements of involuntary manslaughter. He wrote that on social media in support of Representative Galonsky, a Democrat from Ohio, who claims she will refer the president to The Hague for his expression of hope hydroxychloroquine will successfully treat coronavirus patients. Kirshner goes on, Glenn Kirshner from NBC, to say, in fact, his gross negligence is beginning to look more like conduct evincing a conscious disregard of an extreme risk of death, serious bodily injury, the standard for depraved heart, second-degree murder. That's what NBC News analyst Glenn Kirshner said about President Trump supporting making hydroxychloroquine available to doctors to prescribe. John Nolte in the Breitbart made this observation. He says, people are dying. We just hit death number 10,000. These partisan freaks seem eager to boost the death toll by scaring people away from trying something that could potentially save their lives, just to own Trump. What's wrong with these people? And I think he's right. And I would just want you to be aware of it. If you flip around the dials, this is the kind of stuff you're going to hear. And you should hear it. You should know what they're saying, because the wicked among us are doing everything they can to promote wickedness. They don't care if people die as long as their political gains and their power can be grabbed. And that's really what's happening here. All right, coming up next, we have a treat. Rachel Boulevard will be joining us. And that's not the topic. It's a treat, but her presence. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
That changed my life just from that ultrasound picture.
When it comes to choice,
The Ministry of Preborn offers the ultimate life-saving choice by providing a free ultrasound. When an abortion-minded woman sees her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life.
I'm going to keep my baby, and I'm going to keep growing, and I'm going to be the great mom.
Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country, and their mission is to help save babies' lives and souls through love and compassion and the message of Jesus Christ. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for General Joseph Lengle, Chief of the National Guard Bureau. He is a command pilot and is responsible for the preparedness of the nearly 460,000 National Guard and Air National Guard personnel. Philippians 2:3 reminds us of the qualities of a good leader. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for General Joseph Lengle. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. I need you to do something right now, folks. Text #250 with the keyword baby. We are in a crisis point in American history, and there is growing concern that the nation's abortion rate is about to explode. So I need your help right now to save the life of an unborn child. And that's why I'm partnering with Preborn, an organization equipping pregnancy centers with ultrasound machines. 80% of women who have an ultrasound save their child. So get on your phone right now. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Text #250 with the keyword baby. Jack Murphy is a popular blogger and writer in the nation's capital. He's also an avid health enthusiast. So the other day, he was weightlifting in front of his home, clean and press day. You folks who lift weights know what that's all about. Well, you can imagine Jack's surprise when the police showed up. Not just one car, but two. Turns out his neighbor called the cops, accusing Jack of violating the city's emergency quarantine orders. The authorities quickly assessed the situation, determined Jack had not broken any laws by lifting weights on his own property. I'm hearing stories like this across the nation, folks, where government leaders, mostly Democrats, are urging citizens to rat out their neighbors. Jack says the quarantine is making people nuts. I'd say slap crazy nuts. This is not the America our founding fathers intended. This is a police state dreamed up by the communists and the socialists. As always, let not your heart be troubled, America. Be prudent, but don't panic. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Do you think that more needs to be done in the next package now that we've seen these appalling, historic unemployment numbers already just today?
Yes. I mean, there's a long list of things. The OSHA, family and medical leave more broadly interpreted, free testing. The list goes on and on.
Are you taking into consideration green jobs, green infrastructure?
Yes, we need it big, we need it bold, and we need it futuristic, which means green.
I mean, there's a long list of things, infrastructure, clean water, community health centers. The list goes on and on.
Well, this is the case for universal health care.
We absolutely have to transform our health care system.
Absolutely, we see this as an opportunity to reshape the way we do business and how we govern.
Fully paid sick leave for all our workers, student loan forgiveness, cost-free treatment for the COVID-19, whatever the costs are relating to that.
I mean, there's a long list of things. Internet, broadband, the grid. You have to have mobility. We need money for the postal services.
The national minimum wage should be $15, but that's not nearly enough.
The list goes on and on.
A national effort to enlist doctors, nurses, hospital workers of all kinds.
I think the government should step in.
I believe the federal government should take over contracting,
and acquiring all the medical supplies that we need.
We got to have telehealth. We got to restructure the way we deliver health care. So, yes, Jim Clyburn is a restructuring government guy.
I mean, there's a long list of things.
Rent suspensions, payment suspensions, mortgage suspensions, guaranteed housing, expand our public health care systems, drop the Medicare age to zero. Whatever way we can get this done, let's get it done.
The list goes on and on.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And the list does go on and on. We saw that when the $2.2 trillion bill was passed in both houses of Congress week before. I think it was week before last. Could have been last week because, you know, the time is kind of weird right now. But it's just, it's appalling to see what is happening in our country. And while we're all focused on the coronavirus, the left is busily trying to transform this country and Barack Obama's image, and some could say before that, the socialist image, and before that, the communist image. Honestly, you can argue that case. We were hearing that seeds are being outlawed in Vermont. Seeds. People cannot buy seeds and plant vegetables. I saw a notice on a grocery store bin, and it said that these, you know, you cannot buy these. It's kind of, it was padlocked off. If you want seeds, you know, you'll have to go to Walmart. And some that I know were reminding me that Joseph Stalin did the same in Russia, made seeds unavailable before this great famine came, and he starved millions of his own people. Just saying, there are scary similarities between the kind of control the left wants right now and is exhibiting in living color, and what we're actually seeing happening in our homes and in our streets. Well, Rachel Bovart is my guest today, and I'm glad she's here because I mentioned her name in her absence just when this $2.2 trillion bill was being signed, because Rachel was a real hero. She was busy watching while the rest of us were kind of, we were watching too, but not like Rachel. She was watching moment by moment and reading and researching and reading that entire bill and reporting. And interestingly enough, she was tweeting on that as she was tweeting on what she was finding in the bill that no one had read. She was getting that out on the Senate floor, and his name escapes me, the senator from Arkansas, was actually picking up on those tweets and repeating them on the Senate floor. And even moderates like Tom Cotton, even moderates like Susan Collins were actually stirred to action. I'm not sure that if the final result should have been what it was, but Rachel was part of that. Rachel, by the way, is with Conservative Policy Institute. That's Jim DeMint's group. She also served in the House and Senate in many roles. She was legislative director for Senator Paul, and I could go on and on talking about her qualifications, but I want to hear her voice. Rachel, thanks for joining me this morning.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Rachel, a personal question first. I did not know you worked for Senator Paul. I wondered and wondered and wondered how he's doing. He was, you know, diagnosed with coronavirus, and he's weakened because of the accident. Do you know anything about how he's doing?
Yeah, he's doing well. He had just a very mild case, almost asymptomatic. He was tested out of an abundance of caution because, like you said, he had part of his lung removed after the accident with his neighbor. But he's doing well, so that's good news.
Yeah, thank God for that. I mean, that has been one issue that just was like a knife in my heart after all he's been through. Okay, Rachel, in retrospect, after following that bill so carefully and living and breathing it, it's been a week or so, 10 days maybe, in retrospect, do you think, how in the world do we end up with such a massive bill? What happened there that conservatives and Republicans and everyone should join together in placing so much debt on the future of young Americans?
Well, I think it really broke down into two groups among Republicans. You had Republicans who were really focused on doing something for working families and small businesses who are impacted through no fault of their own. You know, you have businesses going under because the government told them, you know, people can't go to their restaurant. And so you had a group of Republicans that was really focused on that. But then you have Congress generally who cannot let a crisis go to waste. And so you had, you know, these big spending appropriators who said, oh, this bill's going to pass? Well, I have a million priorities I want to put into it. You know, you had Democrats doing the same thing. You had, you know, corporate relief to the tune of $500 billion that was going in there. And so it just became loaded up and loaded up and loaded up. What started as I think, actually a decent bill just morphed into this giant package, totally full of unrelated provisions. I mean, we talked about the $25 million for the Kennedy Center, $500,000 for a water project in Utah. The Forest Service got $3 million for rangeland research, $48 million for a sex ed extension. All of this doesn't belong in a bill simply to address coronavirus, but that's what happens in Congress. And I think as they're talking about a phase four package, this is where conservatives need to stand up and say, if we do anything at all, and I don't even know that we need to yet because the bill that they just passed just started to go into effect, right? So we don't even know how that's taking effect at all and what kind of impact that's having. But if we do anything at all, it needs to simply build on the family and individual and small business relief that was passed in that bill and nothing more.
Yep. Amen and amen. So, Rachel, let's talk about what you've just written about, because even though this was a small $25 million expenditure in that bill, it's probably the one that has gotten the most attention. The Kennedy Center for Performing Arts, which you and I have both been to, I'm sure. It's gorgeous, beautiful, great talent. Some of the greatest talent in the world performs at the Kennedy Center. According to, with Nancy Pelosi's insistence, they got $25 million in this coronavirus bill. So people are saying, what's going on with that? Well, you have researched this, and you have found out a lot more things that should even disturb us more. Tell us what you found.
Well, I just looked into their tax filings and their annual report because, you know, the case was made, oh, well, the Kennedy Center needs this kind of support to keep their people employed, because, again, that's the goal of that bill, right, is to help businesses keep people employed. Well, they didn't. They took the $25 million. They've so far laid off over 1,000 of their employees, including their entire orchestra. And they did this while sitting on $500,000 worth of assets and an endowment over $120 million, not to mention the $150 million that they've raised from programming. So, you know, this is an organization that's sitting on millions and yet lobbied the Congress to get $25 million, you know, to quote-unquote deal with the fallout from coronavirus, and then laid off over 1,000 of their employees anyway. This is not the type of business that the legislature should be trying to help. We are trying to help the mom-and-pops, you know, the small business, Main Street, who is suffering through no fault of their own. The Kennedy Center, unfortunately, does not meet that qualification.
You actually quote David Rubenstein, who was the Kennedy Center board chairman, of talking about all the money that they have tucked away that you just described in great detail, their trusts, their whatever they have, endowments. And he said, the Kennedy Center intends to, quote, preserve as much capital as we can. So they lobbied for the $25 million, and you said the pretense was because of the effect on them of the coronavirus?
Yeah, you know, they said, oh, well, we're going to have reduced ticket sales, performances canceled, all of which is true. But, you know, their point was, if we're going to help, you know, survive this and keep people employed, we need this extra infusion of cash. And keep in mind that Congress already gave them $40 million in appropriations this year. So they receive annual money from Congress anyway. They made the case that they needed money over and above that to, you know, manage this crisis. But what it sounds like they actually meant was just keep their board employed and hoard capital while laying off everybody else. And that is not, again, what Congress intended.
And just to be clear, they knew they had the $25 million that they asked for. They got it. The president even signed, you know, said grudgingly, we need to give that to them. And it was the next day that they fired the entire orchestra. So it was really, really, honestly, so bold, audacious, I guess you could say. And you've looked into things that, you know, I have hints of but didn't really know. You talk about this event, the Kennedy Center Honors. Tell us about that and just kind of describe what the Kennedy Center is into right now.
So the Kennedy Center Honors are the biggest event that the Kennedy Center does every year. And it's designed to honor artists from around the country, but what it's really turned into is just this sort of celebrity culture where you have celebrities giving awards to other celebrities, and it's extremely political. You know, President Trump has not gone for the previous, I think, 3 years because every artist takes the opportunity on stage to make, you know, condescending comments about President Trump and his supporters. But at the last Kennedy Center Honors, of course, Nancy Pelosi got a standing ovation for her impeachment efforts. And so that kind of tells you the culture of the award show itself. But again, this is supposed to be, the Kennedy Center is, they call themselves the nation's cultural center. It is supposed to be for the people. But then they go and throw these kind of sort of award ceremonies that belittle the working people, and also the tickets cost $6,000. So it's pretty clear they have no interest in anyone coming except for celebrities.
You know, the other part of that is, I'm trying to recollect the details here, Rachel, but I think it was Austin Roos. I'm sure you know Austin, and he was writing, I believe it was last Christmas, about taking his small children to the Kennedy Center. I believe it was a performance of Nutcracker Suite. But he talked about, you know, it was some famous musical production. I'm sorry, I can't recall. And he talked about how suddenly on this stage they introduced homosexuality and were very graphic about it. In the course of what was a play that had nothing to do with that. And there he had his small children in the Kennedy Center, captive audience, and how appalled he was. And I think, you know, I've seen that. I love theater, so my husband and I attend as often as we can around D.C., all kinds of things. And I have seen myself, even at the Ford Theater, politically correct doesn't seem to be quite as harsh a description. The advocacy of perversion, really, even in, you know, the most basic of plays, twisting the plot lines. And the Kennedy Center, I'm guessing, if they did it on that, they probably are doing it on other things as well. Do you know anything about that?
So they really have deferred to this sort of woke culture. Again, very little to do with anyone, you know, in the regular world, but sort of in this elite culture, it's a virtue signal, right? It's to say, well, I'm woke, I'm better than everyone else. And so you do see it a little bit in their performances, just like you see it in the theaters that you described, the Folger, you know, around D.C. This goes back to sort of the Kennedy Center Honors, which is their flagship event every year. These celebrities come, they, you know, trumpet their woke causes that nobody else really cares about outside of Hollywood. But this is now what the Kennedy Center is about. And again, it goes back to this idea that if they are intended to be the nation's cultural center and they receive taxpayer money to do that, you'd think they want to be more reflective of the broad culture of America and not just the one of Hollywood or the liberal elite or the, you know, playground of D.C. bureaucrats. But unfortunately, that's what they've become. And I think it's what makes that $25 million and how they treated their workers so infuriating, because it's just simply a reflection of this elite culture that doesn't, you know, actually represent anyone's culture except for theirs.
One of the great points you make in this piece, among others, is the contrast. This bill, this $2.2 trillion bill, was meant to help small businesses. And so you talk about how we've already made the point, the Kennedy Center is not a small business. And the second thing is you contrast it with others, other industries, other entities in the culture responding very differently. Say a word about that, Rachel.
Yeah, that's something that's really struck me about, you know, this crisis, because we really have seen these bigger industries step up. Not all of them, but so many of them have stepped up in this time of crisis to come together. And you've seen everyone from, you know, the MyPillow guy, Mike Liddell, who's retooling his million-dollar factory to make face masks. Hanes, the cotton maker, is doing the same thing. Starbucks said it'll pay its employees for 30 days anyway, even if they don't come to work. Wegmans, the grocery chain that was founded in my hometown of Rochester, is giving their employees a $2 raise, you know, from March to April and probably beyond. And so these are the types of things that you're starting to see. Individual business owners, Mattress Mack out of Houston, Texas, is feeding families every evening in the parking lot of his mattress store. These are the things that people are doing out of the goodness of their hearts. We're all coming together because this is a crisis that affects all of us. And the Kennedy Center's just abject selfishness just stands really in direct contrast to that. And I think that's why it really stings and it really sticks out among a lot of these other provisions.
Yeah, I totally agree. By the way, we'll put your article, which is about the Kennedy Center, on our Facebook page so people can share it with other people, because I think we need to know, and especially since they're getting ready to do, they want to do, according to Nancy Pelosi, and even the president has weighed in saying is all in favor of another package. If they even dare to do something like this, we're going to have to fight back. And I'm not confident that people in Washington are going to fight, Rachel. It might have to be the people. Rachel Boulevard, you are a national hero right now, kiddo. Thank you for all you're doing, and we'll talk soon. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What would it take for you to compromise your principles? My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Recently, I heard a statement that went like this. I don't think principles matter if you can't get elected. Principles form the core of who you are. Principles form the foundation of a civil society. George Washington, in his farewell address, identified religion and morality as indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, George Washington said. It makes me think of a scripture. What would it profit a man to gain the whole world yet lose his soul? What would it profit a candidate to gain an election but lose his principles?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We hear a lot about God's judgment, but what about God's grace? On the next Focus on the Family, Canadian humorist Phil Calloway shares stories of childhood misdeeds, the perils of being a referee for church hockey, and other situations where God's grace has a chance to shine. Next time on Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
And the Bible says we're not supposed to rejoice at the downfall of people, even when they're wicked.
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
I don't a bit more want anything bad to happen to them than the man in the moon. I really don't.
The Awakening.
I believe God is the one who steps in the midst of problems that are simply in the world and affect us all, steps in and brings grace and peace and healing and joy in the midst of very difficult and trying times.
The Awakening, weekdays at noon Central on American Family Radio.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. President Trump said last weekend that, quote, we have to get back to work. We have to open our country again. How do we do that? Here's a suggestion. First, if people don't have the symptoms, fever, dry cough, difficulty breathing, let them go back to work. Urge them to be smart, wash their hands, and practice social distancing when they can. Second, the moment someone begins to experience symptoms, urge them to stay home from work and get a prescription for chloroquine. Third, if we're going to quarantine anybody, let's make it folks over 70 with an underlying health condition. Everybody else, be smart and resume normal behavior. Singapore has done this, and they haven't shut down anything, including schools. Time for America to hang out the open for business sign again, the sooner the better.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Over the next few days, the Jewish people will remember their predecessors' murderous persecution at the hands of ancient Egypt's pharaoh. Interestingly, on the eve of this Passover, they received an official apology for a contemporary foreign leader's rabid anti-Semitism. Sir Keir Starmer was just elected to replace the man whose loathing of Jews and their homeland contributed to the British Labour Party's crushing defeat late last year at the hands of the now critically ill Prime Minister Boris Johnson. Sir Keir immediately repudiated the policies of his notorious predecessor, Jeremy Corbyn, saying, quote, anti-Semitism has been a stain on our party, unquote, and promising to, quote, tear out this poison by its roots, unquote. We'll see if Labour's partisans will actually implement this long-overdue course correction. Meantime, we can only hope that their counterparts in America's own anti-Semitic Democratic Party will do the same. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. I just got an email from someone, and I haven't even had a chance to read it all the way through, but I'm going to share it with you because it's important information. And this person is actually tracking the number of deaths from different sources than what you're hearing. We had, you know, WHO, World Health Organization, and National Institute for Health, which neither of organization I trust. I have to tell you, I just don't. I remember, you know, with the National Institutes for Health, which is Anthony Fauci's, you know, group. I remember it when we were covering. I used to be on television talking about this a lot, so I had to become somewhat expert as just a spokesperson or a pundit. I wasn't a medical person about the connection, the potential connection between breast cancer and abortion. Very controversial, as you can imagine, because the abortion industry and the left in our country, abortion is their sacrament. They abortion, abortion, abortion at all costs. You must be able to kill your babies at will and whenever. That is sacred to them. So if anyone comes after that and should link breast cancer to abortion, that is like anathema. That is, you must be silenced. And yet I read and researched and talked to lots of people who felt there is a direct correlation because of the drop in estrogen. I don't want to get into all of that, but let me just say the National Institutes for Health started screening, you know, it started, they took a side, that's for sure, shutting down any possibility. Plus, did the National Cancer Institute, I think, also took off of their website some studies that were, I remember one particular one was done by a very liberal doctor who I ended up interacting with, who had done an incredible study that showed there was a very strong correlation between the two. It had to do with estrogen levels that develop during pregnancy, and then they are exponential in a woman's body. And if a pregnancy is suddenly cut off, the estrogen remains, and the theory is that it puts the woman at higher risk for breast cancer because, you know, high levels of estrogen are correlated with that. So it made sense, and studies were showing that, but it wasn't conclusive. But no, you can't talk about that, can't even say it. And that's when I went off the rails with the National Institute for Health. And then after Barack Obama became president, can you figure out who he might have put in place there? Any idea? And so when they tell us that that's what they're saying and these are experts from there, I'm sorry. I'm sure that there are some things good that they do, but I suspect everything. Yeah, so... but here's a email from someone who's tracking from a different source the numbers. And he says the death tracking projection available at the site he's using, which is used by the Fed, available at the site used by the feds to make decisions as how now dramatically diverged. Let me back up and read properly. The death tracking projection available at this site, which is used by the feds to make decisions, has now dramatically diverged from this independent accounting of COVID-19 deaths. April 5th was very inconvenient for their modeling, as there were approximately 800 deaths, a dramatic drop from their prediction. April 6th was also below their projections at the bottom of their estimated range. And now the independent death tracking, which gives the state-by-state data, is way out of whack with the projections which are used. Because one of the two completely got April the 5th wrong. The difference matters because it informs on the argument of opening the economy through much of America on May 1st. When you get to the trend lines, we are either on track for a total of 81,000 deaths or about 40,000 deaths. So, in other words, it's a huge difference. By the way, since about a third of the total deaths come out of New York, and since we know that hospitalization rates are dropping significantly in New York, and that Governor Cuomo is asking for help in getting hydroxychloroquine in New York, as it is helping people survive the virus. Given this, it is unreasonable to believe that the state, along with across the river New Jersey, have been the major contributors to the rising death toll, are well down the backside of the bell curve. Yet the deaths are continuing at the same high rate as before the availability of hydroxychloroquine. In other words, the deaths they're reporting. Somehow, I believe the independent death charting, which takes each state's self-reported numbers and tallies. He's saying that the thing that he's following, which is different than their official account, he feels is much more trustworthy, and he's a little angry about that. So am I, and I'm just telling you, Houston, we have a problem, and do we not know this already? I think we are rapidly coming to the place where we just can't trust anything. And that's sad. That's really sad. And I said, one of the solutions to that is to pick out people in the media that you think you can trust. A proven record. What they say is actually what you see. Chris Wallace would not be one of those people. He is just on my bad list and has been for a very long time. Never to be trusted. Just not. Just saying, I picked him out. I could pick out others. Let me point to this. This is an article by Elizabeth Vaughn, and she says, the CDC They're the same in the same pocket, federal organization that has been, you know, peopled by people who are on the left. But the CDC has introduced a new code to, in their words, accurately capture mortality data for coronavirus disease 2019. It goes on to say that they have a new code. It says the World Health Organization has added a second code. And bottom line is they are reporting deaths, but they're not distinguishing between like people like that Democrat from New York who blamed, said President Trump has blood on his hands because his 90-year-old mother died of COVID-19. But of course, it turns out that she was very old and had a lot of other things wrong with her. But he has, the president has blood on his hands. So these reports of deaths are not distinguishing other causes of death. I read one. Here's a man in Nebraska. He's in his 80s, but he was in hospice. He was in hospice already from other things. So they report that he got COVID and that of course, then is the cause of his death. So you can see that, and that I think probably happened in Washington State at the nursing home. Now, that doesn't mean younger people are not contracting it and dying. I'm not saying that. I'm just telling you, they're playing with us. They're messing with us when it comes to the numbers. And so take that and just be wise in how you respond. I think don't panic so much about your physical condition. Almost everyone who gets coronavirus recovers. People die of the flu in much greater proportion, thousands, tens of thousands. And we're talking about 10,000 deaths in a country of over 300 million. That's actually very small. You do know that, right? Yet we're freaking out. I think that's bothering me more than just about anything. And I can't quite put my finger on what's happening here and why some people are just really freaking out, even Christians. I guess, you know, if we are going to be so concerned about living, we should never get in a car. There are probably more people killed in car accidents, I'm guessing, than COVID-19. We shouldn't, you know, take any risks at all. I don't know. What other risks do you take? Do you go skiing? Play racquetball? Why do you play? I don't know. People die. And it's a risk we take every time we get up in the morning that we might die, we might get sick, because there are viruses everywhere. We transmit them to each other on a regular basis, and we build up immunities. And that's another thing. This is really creepy. I read this. This is very complicated, and so I'm going to try to make it uncomplicated, which, trust me, is not easy. I had to really hang with this to read it. But it's written by a woman named Rosemary Fry. She is from Canada. She has a lot of credentials when it comes to medical, but I can't remember. I can't see exactly what they are. I'll tell you if I get to it. But Bill Gates, she's reporting, did an interview with Chris Anderson, who does, he's the curator of TED. It's that thing that some of you may be familiar with called TED Talks, where he interviews interesting people around the globe. All right, so in the course of that conversation, I'm going to summarize this. What she's saying is that in the course of this conversation, Bill Gates, in a long conversation, tells Chris Anderson on this TED Talks that the long-term goal here is he and his millions and billions are trying to find a vaccine for coronavirus, or for COVID-19. Maybe coronavirus in general, I don't know. And in the process of the conversation, though, he lets it be known that he is not for people going around building up natural immunities to disease. And he actually says that. He talks about this is, you know, what shutting people away in the United States, this is our way of, you know, cutting back, yes, on the infections. But he recognizes that it also cuts back on people's ability to build up immunity. But he thinks that's a good thing. Because what he wants to do is come to this point where, I forgot what he calls it. It's like you'll have this certificate that will say you'll be vaccinated. You'll all have to be vaccinated. 100% of you will have to be vaccinated. He actually says that. And you will be able to carry around this certificate that says, I have it or I don't have it. And this will be mandatory. And that's what Bill Gates is pushing for while he's researching a vaccine for the virus. It is a potentially, talk about somebody making money off of something. This is what the people who are working with Bill Gates will be doing. They will be making tons of money. By the way, Dr. Williams, I can't see his first name, but he was in another interview. And this female doctor points out, she's a molecular biologist from a faculty of medicine. She was a freelance medical journalist for 22 years. That's her credentials, out of Canada. So she points out Dr. Williams and Dr. Chazan were together. And she said, you notice that they were actually, they don't live together, and they were sitting very close in this interview. And they know, as well as Gates does, that there is little or any reason to worry about being in close contact with other people unless you or they are vulnerable to developing a severe illness from COVID-19. He surely knows also that if you contract COVID-19 and you're otherwise healthy, you'll very likely have few symptoms, if any, and recover quickly. And that this exposure, in fact, is beneficial because in the process you will develop antibodies to the virus and have natural, long-lasting immunity to it. And while Dr. Williams lectured the public about maintaining social distancing, he appeared and spoke right next to this Dr. Chazan. Dr. Williams is among the large cadre of powerful officials who've crashed the global economy by forcing tens of millions of small and medium-sized businesses to close in the name of the need for forced, severe social distancing and lockdowns. They've shattered society, suspended most civil liberties, and prohibited most activities and connections that kept people mentally and physically healthy. At the same time, the officials have prioritized COVID-19 care over everything else, and as a result, severely limited billions of people's access to life-saving healthcare services, ranging from acquiring medication and blood transfusions to having organ transplants and cancer surgeries. All right, so this is from Rosemary Fry, again, a molecular biologist from a faculty of medicine, freelance medical journalist for 22 years. That's her article. I just think it's fascinating. I want to morph quickly into another article by Daniel Horowitz this morning. Daniel writes for Conservative Review. He's a good friend, fearless and never tiring boy. Yeah, this is what he writes. Shutdown, not coronavirus, is causing loss of medical personnel. So Daniel goes through and talks about, I'll read this. I've got 2 minutes here. Call it common core science being dictated by common core math of the erratic models and simulations from Dr. Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx. Most medical care is shut down in this country to deal with the flow of COVID-19 patients predicted by their models. Then when those models fail to materialize and hospitals are empty from the mythical surge, he says, which I agree, outside of a few hotspots, medical personnel are furloughed. And we are left with the worst of both worlds. We are told by our new dictators that destroying the entire country from head to toe was worth it in order to save lives of those afflicted with COVID-19, mainly in New York and the city area. But what if, in addition to destroyed lives and economy of all the lives being lost as an indirect result of the virus, we are also directly destroying lives of other healthcare patients who cannot get care because of the overbroad and arbitrary shutdown? He goes on to track, I wish I had more time to read this, but he's talking about how doctors are having to be laid off and medical personnel from hospitals around the country who are not able to perform even, you know, any other surgeries. He talks about people needing hip surgeries and knee surgeries and other procedures. The hospitals are shutting down because that's what the, Anthony Fauci and Deborah Birx and their models are showing. I have so much more to say, but we'll put Daniel's article on our Facebook page, too. You need to read and share it. Thank you for listening, Sandy Rios.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.